This is the Pete Riley Show podcast, episode 15, the holiday season 2017. Recently, I asked on Facebook if there was anything special or unique that you made for Thanksgiving. And I got quite a few comments. Turnips, carrots, homemade mac and cheese. Pam said they have an onion casserole that her grandmother used to make. Sharon said she has a broccoli and cheese dish that the family waits for all year long and there are never any leftovers. We had a lot of comments about stuffing. Carol has what is known as pop-pop stuffing.
Well, pop-pop was my father, and that's what my kids called him. And so the kids will always say, you know, you're going to make pop-pop stuffing? And my father's side is of Bohemian descent, my father was known for his Polish cooking.
Okay.
And my father was a fabulous cook. And we used to kid my mother about if it hadn't been for Daddy when we were growing up, we would have starved. Because my mother was not a good cook.
And how did she take that? Was she okay with that? Did she agree?
Well yeah, because she could make the best American chop suey. So we had American chop suey or macaroni and cheese, but she knew because she didn't like to cook, and my father loved it.
What made his stuffing different?
It was meat. It was a portion of two portions of ground beef and one portion of ground pork.
Okay.
And he would do that. He would cook the giblets and the turkey neck, and he would use the juice from that to moisten the meat. Hmm. And he would moisten the meat, and then the key ingredient was Royal Milk Lunch Crackers.
Oh, I remember those. Yes.
Yeah, and it had to be Royal Milk Lunch. That was the key ingredient, along with where he would hand grate onions, carrots, and celery, along with the with the meat, and then moisten it with the broth that he made, and added a little bit of bell seasoning, and that would go in the turkey. And like my mom, I too am blessed with a husband who loves to cook. And so Tom makes pop-ups meat stuffing every year.
So
41 years
it.
Of marriage, I have never cooked a turkey. My husband does it, and he is a wonderful cook.
Well, you're also very lucky that you were able to get the recipe for pop-up stuffing, right?
Yeah, because my husband likes to cook as much as my dad did. And nobody has been able to duplicate it, but Tom comes pretty close.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us, and I hope you have a very nice Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too, Pete.
All right. Are you staying home for the holiday?
No, we're going to my son's house, and but we got to bring the stuffing.
Oh, yeah. Renee makes a ground linguica and sausage cornbread stuffing. Dorothy makes grandma's bread stuffing with sausage. Henry Bosquet makes a French meat pie stuffing. What is it exactly? You described it as a French meat pie without the crust.
Yeah, essentially, but you don't really... I don't know how most people make their French meat pie, but the way I make mine is with ground pork and beef, sauté with onions, you know, browned up, and then you add, you make basically really good mashed potatoes from scratch, and then you kind of fold the two together. It's probably more meat than mashed potatoes, but it's like just a flavorful little batch, you know, and then just put it in a nice like pie crust and bake it off.
So is that pretty much what this dressing is? What
this dressing is more it's more closer to gâteau, only it's served warm, and you use quite a bit of dry breadcrumbs in it to sort of tighten it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then it can be all pork or it can be pork and beef mix. I like to do a little pork and beef, and then it's seasoned up kind of like a meat pie, but a little heavier. So you season it with a little cinnamon, a little bit of allspice, some nutmeg, black pepper, and I like to use kosher salt.
Now, is this your own recipe, or did you see it somewhere once?
My grandmother, actually, on my father's side, made it every year for the holidays. Mm-hmm. So we have it at Thanksgiving, we have it at Christmas, you know. And in between, it would be French meat pie and gâteau, you know.
Now,
but
what
this
is...
this stuff only come out on the holiday.
What is gâteau?
So, there's a couple of different pronunciations for it, spellings and everything else. But essentially what that is a French-Canadian lunch meat, if you will, like a potted meat. What they would do is they take all the scraps and the pieces of pork that were, you know, either too tough to, you know, to make into a steak or whatever, or, you know, they didn't want to spend all day stewing it down, and so they grind it into like ground pork. And they would add a whole bunch of lard. A lot of times it's leaf lard, the stuff from right around the belly.
Mm-hmm.
And they would put that in there, and then they would just boil it like for hours. And they'd put in some onions, and they grind up the onions and put that in there and boil them too. And then they would. Some people would put a little bit of breadcrumb in it, and some would. You know, it depends. But then they would chill it. And they would take that to lunch with them, you know, in the mills. So it was like they take that and some crackers, or they put it on bread, like
right.
A sandwich. Basically, it was like a lunch meat, you know?
Sounds good. I'd say
yeah.
you could
probably... It's really good. It's sinfully good. Cause you don't skim the pork, the fat off. Like normally, you know, if you're going to make a sauce or something with your, like a meat sauce with the pork, you would skim the fat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this stuff, the fattier, the better. Like, you know, if I'm going to go and select out the pork to have it ground, I would tell them to add additional, you know, pork fat.
Janice makes a potato stuffing with chopped celery and onion. She says you prepare the potatoes like you do for mashed potatoes, but you cook them in a chicken broth. She says only a few of us like it, but I don't care. For me, it isn't Thanksgiving without it. And since I've been the cook for 50 years, it will always be my favorite side dish. One of my wife's colleagues, Dana, actually sent us a recipe to try this year.
The recipe was given to my aunt by an old German sausage man down in New Jersey. And the recipe is just absolutely fantastic to go with any meal, especially turkey. And then you can use it almost like a piece of meatloaf in a sandwich with the leftovers.
Wow. So, can you give me any details here before I try it? Or what gives it... what makes it so special?
I believe the fact that the ingredients itself, because you have apple juice and cranberry sauce. So you got that back of the jaw tang that gets you, and then you got the nice sweetness of the apple juice on that. So your body in your mouth is like, whoa, wait a minute, what's this explosion of flavor, rather than just that nice simple sage and bread flavor that you get from a nice traditional stuffing.
So do you make this every year?
Every year. And sometimes I'll even make it on Easter because my family's like, oh, please make Aunt Doris's stuffing. Please make Aunt Doris's stuffing.
All right. We'll have to try that. Priscilla was telling me something about you had a turkey recipe or a dinner turned out great almost by accident once?
that my way that I cook a turkey now is totally 100% by I got tied up at my daughter's Thanksgiving football game because she was in the band, and at the time it was just her and I for Thanksgiving. So the way that I cook my bird, I have one of those big, beautiful, old ceramic-covered roasting pans.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So I put my bird in that and then cover the bottom with tinfoil so it makes cleaning nice and easy. And I put about, I'd say, an inch to 2 inches of apple juice in the bottom of that. So it's roasting. And what had happened is we got held in traffic trying to get out of the high school. And so that, you know, 20 minutes, 15 minutes at the end of the cooking time, you take the cover off so you can get that really nice crispy skin.
Yeah.
We couldn't do that because we were stuck. So we get home. I'm like, son of a biscuit. Pete, we were able to dress the whole turkey, and I never took a knife out. Everything fell off the bone. It was fantastic. So that's the only way that I'll cook a bird.
Wow. So you discovered that by accident, and now it's become
It was total 100% by accident. It was like, if we never got stuck in traffic, that recipe would have never come to fruition.
A couple of people talked about brining the turkey. Brining. First, my friend Matt. First of all, how did you discover this?
Well, I've been an avid, not that I do it so much now, but a home brewer for quite a few years, probably about 10, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been a hobby of mine to brew my own beer. And I used to subscribe to magazines for home brewing, and about 6 years ago, there was a write-up in the fall about being a prime turkey, and I tried it. And everybody fell in love with it.
So you've been doing this for 5 or 6 years?
This I think will be either my fifth or sixth. I can't remember that I've been doing it. So,
what does it involve?
Well, it involves first making a basic brine, which is any type of brine or something, which is basically a quart of water. And then you take 2 cups of kosher salt. It has to be kosher salt. According to the recipe, I've never strayed from it on that part of it.
Okay.
They say that's a real weird brine something. And then like a cup of brown sugar, light, dark, whatever you choose. And then any type of, like, for turkey, obviously, I use like a poultry type of fresh herbs. You know, your thyme, bay leaves, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then cut up a couple carrots, peel them, cut them, put that in there. A few onions, peel them, cut them. Celery, peel them, cut them.
Yeah.
And then usually I take one lemon, quarter it, and then an orange, quarter it. And you just put that in a stock pot and get it to a good boil with all the herbs and everything in it. That's like the first. It is a process. It's not something that it takes days. Like, I started this Sunday night, and I'll be taking the turkey out of the brine after I get the phone off you for the next phase of drying it out in the refrigerator and then cooking it on Thursday.
Wow.
So it does take a lot of labor. It's not like just, you know. What the brine does is it actually infuses the turkey from the inside out. I believe on the post that you put, I think I posted the original recipe in it.
Right, you did.
It explains the process of osmosis, which that's what I think really flavors the turkey. Because it almost takes the natural protein juice out of the turkey and infuses it with this brine you're making. So you get, number one, I've never had a turkey that's dried out, and I'm not the greatest turkey cook. You can cut it with a fork.
Wow.
And everyone absolutely loves it, wherever I brought it.
And the taste is just great, huh?
Yeah, and the final phase, I mean, that's your stock. That's your base brine for the turkey, was what I just mentioned to you. And then you got to get the temperature down, so I usually get, you know, a couple bags of ice, throw that in it, and let that melt down into it to bring the liquid up. Now, the whole key with this is you want at least the smaller the turkey, I usually do mine about a 48-hour brine. the whole key is you've got to keep that temperature at 40 degrees. Most people don't have the room to keep a huge pot full of liquid in their fridge.
Right.
I mean, I have an 18-pound turkey. So what I found works with that is I have a Home Depot 10-gallon water cooler, which I sanitize before I put the turkey and the brine in it.
Okay.
Put the turkey and the brine in that, and then they have, like I said, preparation. Frozen, just liquid bags, Ziploc bags of water. I take frozen Ziploc bags, and I put it inside of the water cooler, and then top it off with beer of your choice. Let it soak for 48 hours. Make sure the temperature really doesn't get much above 40, 42 degrees.
Right.
While it's soaking. And take it out and cook it. That's it.
So you can use any beer of your choice? What do you usually use?
I try a different way. I switch it up a little bit every year. And the one thing, if you look at that recipe that I posted online, the one thing I do that they don't do is I grow my own hops. I have hops growing in the yard all summer.
Okay.
So I have bags of hops in the freezer by this time of year, and I actually put some more hops in it. Now, hops are going to bitter it more,
mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to really choose a bitter beer like an IPA to put it in. I usually put a darker stout beer in it because it's a sweeter beer.
Okay.
And you just let it soak.
That sounds good. And the taste.
Whatever
is
your preference is for taste. If you like something a little sweeter, you'd go with a darker beer or a Duck Brown or some type of ale like that. If you like something that's more citrusy or has more of a, you know, I don't want to say pungent, but it's got more of a soury taste to it, mm-hmm. You'd go with a more of a IPA beer because it's got more hops in it, so it's more bitter than it is sweet. That's about it.
And Nancy agrees.
Oh, my gosh. That's the only way to go with turkey. You can buy the cheapest cut of turkey. You steak eat it. I know some people love the organic, free-range. Hey, I'm a 39-cent a pound, you know, generic white turkey coming from Shaw's. And I can turn that thing into the most moist piece of meat that you've ever come across strictly by brining. And brining is basically just that old-fashioned way of preserving food using salt and water. Martha Stewart loves it, by the way. America's Home Cooking, everybody that's a pro does it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And all it is you soak the turkey in a water and kosher salt mixture for anywhere from 4 hours to 12 hours, pull it out, wash it off, and boom, you've got the best turkey ever.
Wow.
It never gets dry unless you cook it for 27 hours, and I suggest not doing that. Actually, it cooks a little bit faster by brining it, and it doesn't taste salty at all. There's no salt taste to it. I mean, you can add the fancy herbs and the infusion and personally, I can't be bothered doing all that stuff. And I noticed at Shaw's, they have this seasoning mix that you can do with brining that's like $7 a container. I'm like, forget that. I spend probably a quarter in the cost of the salt, and I can pretty much get the same effect. Although someone sent that beer grinding recipe that you saw on your post, and I might actually try that next year.
Hmm.
But to me, it's like a gallon of beer, and that's a lot of wasted beer to me.
Why waste
it? I would rather be brining it with the cheap salt and the water and just drink the beer instead.
Yeah, the beer's for me,
but,
yeah.
You know, can we just own them? You know, that's fine, but to me, it's a huge waste.
Did you also comment on the stuffing? Do you have an interesting stuffing recipe that you make?
I don't have an interesting stuffing recipe. What I have is sentimentality because my mother, all due respect to her, she passed away the first year that I was on the school committee in 2004, God bless her. But my mother was a lousy cook. And she admitted it because of our upbringing growing up at Tabor. I never learned to cook because I always had cooks for us at the school.
Right.
So I never technically learned how to cook, and my mother didn't have to cook because, hey, she took all four of the kids and her husband, and we ate at the school. So
right.
She had this very basic stuffing recipe that to this day my kids will ask for it, and I kind of say, you know what, with all of those fancy kind of, you know, recipes that are out there that you can add meat to these things, you can make these things fancy, and they keep going back to, Mom, I want Nana's recipe.
Yeah, yeah.
My mother's recipe was cut up white bread, lots of butter, bell seasoning, and raisins shoved in the butt of the, or the carcass of the...
of the bird. Turkey. Yeah, yeah.
And that was it. And I'm like, but to me, it says grandma.
Right. That's their memory. Yeah.
That's the memory of her and the turkey. And again, we all make jokes about the fact how bad a cook she ever was. But that's the memory that they have of Thanksgiving is Nana's stuffing mixture.
My friend Lynn mentioned a sweet potato casserole. Now, Lynn is a vegan, so I wondered if a special diet is difficult at the holidays. But first, the sweet potatoes. She found this when we were both at WMYS.
You know, we used to read the newspapers, and...
Yeah, back when people read newspapers.
Right. And Wednesday was always, they'd always have recipes, and I just spotted this recipe for sweet potato casserole, and I was curious because I'd never heard of it before. I mean, I have to eat sweet potatoes, and I've eaten the sweet potatoes with the toasted marshmallows on top, but this was different. And I made it, and it tastes like a dessert. It's just really good. So it became a holiday staple. So really, every Thanksgiving, somebody will make it. It's funny because my sister Danielle has sort of taken on that. She kind of hijacked it from me, which is fine. And kind of like, oh, I'll make this potato casserole.
I have this great recipe. Yeah, you got it from me.
Exactly.
You mentioned that she was going to make it vegan for you. And that,
yes.
Yeah, that kind of lit a spark with me. I was thinking, how different is it to... now, when did you become a vegan?
Dan and I were trying to figure that out. It's probably been about 3 years.
Three years.
It was right before, or close to Thanksgiving time, maybe in the summer. And then when Thanksgiving came, it was sort of that first year was, okay, what are we going to, you know, how am I going to do this?
Right.
So I'm a foodie. I love eating, and I enjoy cooking. So it's fun for me to find recipes or to adjust recipes. And I call it veganizing a recipe.
Right.
So that it doesn't have any animal products in it.
Now, is that what it means to be a vegan? You have nothing that has animal product. It's not just being vegetarian, right?
Right. So that's the basic difference between a vegetarian and a vegan. Vegetarians will eat eggs and cheese and milk and ice cream that have, you know, milk and cream and butter and eggs. But vegans typically don't eat or avoid eating anything that comes from an animal. So even honey, which people find that a little strange, but they say, well, you know, the bees make the honey, but it's any animal, anything that comes from an animal, that's what we don't typically eat that.
Is it difficult at Thanksgiving or a family gathering?
It's actually not, because if you think about it, Thanksgiving, a lot of the side dishes are vegetables. And for example, this year I'm going to my sister's house, and we were talking about it yesterday, and she said, well, we're going to make potatoes, and we'll make sure some of it doesn't have butter in it. And I'll make something that is delicious and vegan, and I'll bring enough for everybody. And it's interesting because my dish, whatever I bring, always goes. It's gone. And people really enjoy it. And that gives me pleasure, because I like people to know that you don't have to suffer to be a vegan. I don't deprive myself.
Okay.
So I make food that I really enjoy, and I share it.
And no issues? When I dig into my turkey, you wouldn't be upset, right?
No. Dan is, my husband, he's a carnivore.
He's a meat eater. He's the devil. He's the devil.
We kind of joke that he now eats meat for two of us in his team.
And the holidays are not that big of an adjustment.
No. I enjoy cooking, so I usually come up with some new recipes and try them out. That's a good time to try them out. And usually, like I said, they're pretty well received.
We got a couple of dessert ideas, too. French silk pie, and Liz likes a Nantucket cranberry walnut pie. Nice. I always think of my Aunt Ruth at Thanksgiving. We always had a choice of pies for desserts. And when she couldn't decide which one to have, she called it the Brayley way. A little slice of each one. You can see all of these comments and all of these ideas on my Facebook page. My thanks to everyone for contributing and for talking to us this week. And may you have a wonderful holiday season.